Hello, hello. Hi, how are you? It is so good to have you here. Welcome back to our final episode of Am I Aspie or Autistic? A podcast mini-series that is sharing and discussing some of the perspectives of people who received an Asperger's diagnosis, then had it change in the DSM-5. Especially, we're discussing how this impacted their identity. I am JJ, Joanna Simmons, a psychology graduate, autism researcher, podcaster, and a surfer. If you have been following along, you may not have heard me say that before in my introduction. Well, this episode is about the complexity of identity, and I thought I would add another little thing to help you identify me. In episode 2, I spoke a bit about the labels that we may choose to use to identify ourselves. So as well as me saying I'm a psychology graduate, podcaster, autism researcher, I could also add that I'm a comedian. A sister, a daughter, someone who has experienced mental health challenges, a music lover, and as you can tell by my accent, a Kiwi. How do you choose to identify yourself? Have you changed this over time? What difference has that made over your life? If you like, you can take a deep breath in and out. And see how those questions and thoughts around identity land with you. Maybe you want to take notice of how you're feeling. Maybe see if you can relax the space between your eyebrows. Maybe drop your shoulders down. Feel the space between your back teeth increase as you relax your jaw and settle into whatever you are doing as you listen to this. It's nice to be here with you again. Thanks for joining me. If you like, you can take this time to notice the space around you, the land that you're on, the traditional custodians of the land. Our identity can be really shaped by our environment, our culture. If you like, you can take a moment to consider your culture and how that shapes your identity. Okay, now we've settled in. Let's dive into the content for today's episode. Across this series, based on the 2020 paper by Olivia Smith and Sandra Jones, we have established that whilst diagnoses, which may lead to labels, are helpful in some ways, when these are changed, it can have a large impact. We've heard from individuals who were supportive of the changes, opposed to the changes, and from people who had mixed feelings around the changes. I think the variety of their responses has highlighted how nuanced identity is and how our thoughts and feelings around this can change. So the study found some factors that may have contributed to why people responded to the changes the way that they did. The age of the participants and the age they were diagnosed has been found to have something to do with it. The three participants who were opposed to the changes were all males diagnosed in adulthood. Conversely, the three participants who were supportive of the changes were more demographically diverse. There was a 22-year-old female diagnosed in early adolescence, a 30-year-old male who was diagnosed as a child and heard about his diagnosis in adolescence, and a 60-year-old male who was diagnosed following his son's diagnosis. So these are three quite different people. And that kind of makes sense to me. Like, I think it would be hard if you are over the age of 40 and have spent your whole life trying to understand yourself and form your identity, then receiving a diagnosis you might not understand or even have your own stigma about, and only to then have that change, it would feel like a whole another challenge to navigate, especially if your peers share or have different views to how you do. Similarly, if you are 22 years old and you were diagnosed in early adolescence, then for half of your life, you've kind of known this thing about you. And maybe therefore, when it's changed, it's maybe not felt as difficult to understand. Has anything like that happened to you or someone you know? How was that? The young adult males who we spoke to, who were diagnosed as children and had their diagnosis disclosed to them in adolescence, embraced the term autism when they identified themselves, but they each still had different ideas and support or opposition towards the DSM-5 changes. What do you think that would be like? Learning something about yourself that was found out about you, but you weren't told until you were older. How would that make you feel? I could imagine if anyone has done that, like as a parent, making that decision would be quite difficult as well. Has that happened to you or someone you know? Our participants have had a whole range of responses, and we have found that that is also consistent with another study, a similar study on the impact of diagnosis on 5 young people. That study found that people's reactions to and their perceptions of the diagnosis as an advantage or disadvantage, it kind of depended on whether it gave them more agency and self-control. And as we have heard from our participants, for many, their diagnosis was liberating, or it finally felt like things fit together. But then also for some of them, it kind of felt like an identity was being forced upon them. And another study, like the one we've been focusing on, one done in 2019 by Chambers and their colleagues, they were examining the responses to the DSM-5 changes amongst a pretty similar group. This time it was 9 adult males aged 18 to 25, and they were diagnosed in childhood. This study found that all 9 of these dudes expressed consistent views and that there were benefits of an Asperger's diagnosis, that the DSM-5 change would have negative impacts. And these dudes thought that Asperger's and autism are different conditions. Another little perspective there. So basically the age and the stage someone is in their life might contribute to how they respond to the change. That really means this thing is definitely not one size fits all. And I think that's kind of how we are with identity in general. Like, gee, when I was a teenager, when I was in my early 20s, the way that I identified was kind of quite a lot different to how I do now. By Smith and Jones, the conclusion found that adults previously diagnosed with Asperger's differ in opinion regarding the DSM-5 changes because of how they have different levels of integration with the Asperger's and or autism identities. There are lots of reasons for why they are at different levels of integration, such as the way their diagnosis was delivered, maybe what age they are, what gender they are, the differing levels of connection and affiliation with the neurodiversity movement. As I have been saying, identity is complex, and so whilst age, gender, and stage of diagnosis may contribute to people's responses to the change to the DSM, these things do not specify where each individual is at when it comes to understanding our identity. And it doesn't stop with the DSM or other diagnoses. There's like intersectionalities such as race, sexual orientation, other neurodiversities, our other abilities, our employment status, or what type of Disney character we are from a BuzzFeed quiz, or what type of ice cream we like can be used to identify us and help us and others understand who we are. And all sorts of things can go into the mix that might make coming out or coming home to that identity challenging. Maybe society doesn't understand what that involves. Maybe the people close to you don't understand. Maybe we don't understand ourselves. We've always known that, like, there's something, but we don't know what that is. I want to remind you that the information given on this podcast is only one small piece of what we've already kind of untangled as quite a complex puzzle. Olivia Smith and Sandra Jones acknowledge that this study is limited by the small sample, only having 12 participants. And as we heard, of the 12 people that we spoke to, there was so much range and then also crossover between them. So imagine what it would be like getting to hear from 100 or 12 or 12,000 people, getting to hear how they felt. It was cool that our participants ranged from the age of 22 to 69. It meant that we got a somewhat diverse range of opinions and experiences. But it also means that the differences between different age cohorts were not really able to be thoroughly explored, as we kind of didn't have enough people within each one. So we couldn't say from the sample that all 20-something-year-olds feel this way, because we only spoke to about 3 20-something-year-olds. And similarly, whilst having 3 females in a sample of 12 reflects the gender balance and reported rates of prevalence, it still meant for our study, gender differences were not able to be explored. It's important that we kind of see those limitations and really see that what I've shared in this podcast mini-series, it's kind of like a little scratch on the surface. It's an in-depth look at one piece of the picture, and there is so much more to look at, yeah? So what's really exciting about the work that we've done so far and the ground that we've covered is it makes it clear what can be done in the future. Maybe there could be future studies around this topic area, and maybe they would have greater resources. Maybe they can get more people, and maybe they can potentially explore these areas further. I think the cool thing about research is it helps us understand and draw certain links together. Like, and then through that, we can find where there's space to know more. And then from that, we can draw links between those things. And it's kind of a spiral in that way. One of the links that could be explored in greater depth could include investigating how clinicians differ in delivering an Asperger's or autism diagnosis and how this affects the identity an individual adopts. I imagine if you've had any experience with a medical professional, you probably know some are able to deliver their news in a way that feels good. And some, well, they're not quite as compassionate or nuanced when it comes to that sort of thing, right? This study highlighted that it could be interesting to investigate as well what age and gender differences there are in identity integration and what impact the neurodiversity movement is having on how people respond to a diagnosis. As I like to say, knowledge is power. The knowledge we have uncovered could be useful for therapists working with this population. Maybe they could use the disability identity development and integration theory frameworks that we've talked about and set up to help understanding clients and to help working with clients to help them understand themselves. The knowledge I have shared with you, the stories of the people who are experts in their field, their own lives and identities, I hope it's given you a bit of insight to the complexity of identity. Maybe it's helped you connect with your own knowledge and your own experience around this sort of thing. Maybe all the questions I've given you and opportunities for reflection have brought up more questions. If that's the case, well, I guess I've kind of done my job, as it feels like the more we know, the more we don't know, and I feel like curiosity is kind of a real way to navigate life. But I can understand that, especially when we're constantly bombarded with information about everything all the time, it can be kind of overwhelming. So I'm so grateful that you came along with me to approach this area a little further, that maybe through listening to this and taking some time to reflect, it's kind of helped you, yeah, investigate yourself a little further, or someone you know a little further. I'm just so stoked that you chose your old mate JJ to make this academia feel a bit easier to approach and digest, like snackademia. Something I've been thinking about recently is that while it is helpful to have labels to identify ourselves so we can connect with others like us and access support, maybe it's not vital. From my perspective, and I use this kind of framework when I started the podcast, I don't know if it is as important to focus on the what, but maybe more on the why, the how, and the who. Who a person is in the way we feel when we are around them, not what diagnosis they have, right? Who a person is in the way they laugh, and their laugh is so unique. How they came to be how they are, from the stories and experiences they have, and why they are how they are, not because of their neurodiversity or because of their appetite for only pistachio ice cream, but maybe the why because of the environment they are in or the values that drive them. And for me, changing the DSM to have ASD or autism spectrum condition, I mean, a spectrum allows us to be all as complex as rainbows, and though each one is different, are all still beautiful. And just like you've listened to me share these stories and insights across this series, maybe the way to get to more understanding about this, about ourselves, about identity, is to keep listening to each other and ourselves. After all, we are the experts of our own experience. I'm going to finish right there. Thank you so much for joining me. Take care. Joining me on this episode of Am I Aspie or Autistic? This series was made as part of the Winter Research Scholarship funded by the Australian Catholic University. Most of the information used in this series is from the research by Sandra Jones and Olivia Smith's 2020 paper, Coming Out with Autism, Identity in People with an Asperger's Diagnosis After DSM-5. Links to the original paper and other articles I used to write this episode are in the show notes. This podcast was written, edited, and recorded by me, Joanna Simmons, with the incredible vocal contribution of Lincoln Jones. Thanks to the support of Sandra Jones, Jennifer Lowe, Lisa Levy, and the team at ACU. If you want to share your thoughts of the episode, feel free to post a comment or review, share with a friend or family member, or write to us on autism@acu.edu.au. We would love to hear any questions you have and what this episode brought up for you.